The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Welcome into our Thursday edition of the Leach Report. Happy to have you on board for the next hour to talk UK sports here on the show. Beautiful day, and racing resumed at Keeneland yesterday. And if you were listening to our show, you heard Jeremy Plonk give out a horse named American Greatness for the fifth race, and the horse won at 16-1. So heard from several of you yesterday who were able to share in the good fortune. So we'll get Jeremy back on, see if he can do it again next Wednesday. But congrats to Jeremy Plunk on a nice call there. You can read his picks every day at Keeneland.com and his analysis of the various trends on the expert picks page at Keeneland. And, of course, they are racing again today, gearing up for another big weekend with the Makers 46 Mile on Friday and the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley and the Lexington Stakes coming up on Saturday. Coming up on our show today, Mike Pratt will join us, per usual on Thursdays. Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, as we look toward the spring game on Friday night. And we'll check in with Cameron Mills about the 98 team reunion event that they have going on, a couple of events they have going on, including the signing of the Maker's Mark commemorative bottles tomorrow at Keeneland. Hopefully you already have your ticket. I think the signings begin at 7 a.m. tomorrow out at the Keene Barn. And you take your bottle out and get it signed by Coach Tubby Smith and most of his 1998 championship team. The guy's being honored on this year's commemorative Maker's Mark bottle. Let's get to our Wildcat News of the Day. It's a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Another possible addition to Coach Cal's next recruiting class in the form of 2019 point guard Tyrese Maxey, number two ranked point guard in the class by many. He tells Kyle Tucker of SEC Country that Cal has talked to him about reclassifying. So they've already got Ashton Hagans committed and expected to reclassify. You got Emmanuel Quickley, a point guard in this class. Now they may add Tyrese Maxey. Again, it's very far from a certainty at this point, but it's one of many stories out there that we're following on the recruiting trail. Also, potential of a grad transfer. The name Reed Travis of Stanford has popped up. And speculation about where Kentucky might go. I think this might be more dependent on who comes back because Travis is a front court player. If Washington, Vanderbilt, Gabriel, if all those guys come back, they may not be looking to add another big guy. But if they do, you might keep the name Reed Travis in your back pocket. He is headed off to get evaluated by the NBA. He's put his name in for the draft, but not hiring an agent. Also doing that, reports say Bryce Brown at Auburn, so he's going to leave himself the option of coming back. And Daniel Gafford is going to stay at Arkansas. That's a little bit of a surprise. I thought he would at least put his name in for consideration. He's the really promising young big guy for the Hogs, so that makes Arkansas more formidable for next season. Tomorrow night, spring game over at Kroger Field. And we'll get our look at the quarterbacks under game conditions. Gunnar Hoke, Terry Wilson, and the rest. We'll have the broadcast on the UK Sports Network with pregame starting at 6. And the game gets underway at 6:30. Coach Stoops was on with us yesterday and talked about it would be just offense versus defense. And they have come up with a creative scoring system that we'll do our best to explain to you on the air where the offense can get not only points in the regular way, but with sustaining drives, and the defense can get points with big plays like turnovers and sacks and tackles for loss. I see a tweet from Jen Smith that says, as of yesterday, there were 31,000 tickets distributed for the blue-white game, so that should be a good turnout. Last night in the NBA play, our NBA headed to the playoffs. Minnesota punched its ticket in a win-and-you're-in matchup with Denver. The T-Wolves and Karl Anthony Towns are heading to the playoffs for the first time in Karl's career.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, I apologize for some technical difficulties, but we are working through them and should be back to normal here in just a few minutes. Shannon now is, after playing engineer, is now going to have to put back the producer hat on and catch up to Mike Pratt here in just a second, and we'll get him on to talk a little bit about what all is happening with Kentucky basketball. And as I mentioned in the opening segment, Karl-Anthony Towns getting his first shot to get into the NBA playoffs with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who will now take on the top seed, the Houston Rockets. So they may not last long, but still a good experience for Carl in the first opportunity to get into the playoffs. Mike Pratt joins us now. Did you watch the game last night, Mike?
I did. I stayed up later than normal and
me too.
Watched it. I wanted to see if Little Cat got a ride to the playoff first round, and he's going with the big fella.
At the end of that overtime, I think it was a two-point lead for Minnesota, and Denver missed. And Carl went up in a crowd and just grabbed that rebound with authority, with two hands. I saw the way he grabbed that rebound. I said, if Cal's watching this, I bet he just got a big smile on his face the way he grabbed that rebound.
Two hands and with power, chased it down, all those kind of things you want to see. We knew he was special. It was just a matter of him growing into his game. And but saying all that, you had to feel sorry for Murray. You know, Tom,
yeah.
We saw him when he was a 18-year-old freshman. He had that hit about him. You know, I mean, he was fearless. You could tell he played fearless. He thought fearless. Yeah, he made some mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but man, he wanted to try it. To do all the right things. He wanted to try to make the play, the big play, and he very seldom, I think, in Adobe, which you remember me sitting out there in Iowa telling you that kid was going to play in the NBA because he could defend multiple positions. He was a big dude that really got after it. He's the only guy I saw that bothered Murray, got in his head. Because you remember that game out there, every time Jamal run off those picks and do things, there would be Ananobi, and he just he's playing with Toronto, and I think he's a very talented young player, guy his size that can do many things. But that's the only time I really think that somebody got in Murray's head and messed his game up, and I hated to see him. Anybody but him. Shouldn't say anybody because there's some other guys, but I mean, if it had been another team, I'd have been okay, but I hate to see Murray's game go to waste.
Talk with Mike Pratt. His weekly visits to the show brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. And we're going to take a quick break and reconnect and get you a little better sound for this edition of the Leach Report Radio Network.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
And now we sound much better thanks to Tim Anstead. He's the early favorite for player of the show today by getting it set up a little different connection to circumvent the original problem. And we are back with you here on the Leach Report. Mike Pratt is with us. And Shannon the Dude rolling you back in with the Eagles music as always. Mike, did you make it to the concert in Lexington night before last?
No, I didn't. It slipped up on me. You know, I remember all winter recognizing the fact that they were going to be there. And I was going to, you know, I reached out to some people and they said, call me back. And I don't know, one thing led to the next, trying to get my back still straightened out and all those good things that just slipped through the cracks. But I was there in spirit.
Mike and I were driving to Nashville for the Kentucky game at Vanderbilt back in January in a snowstorm, and we actually got stranded on I-65 just across the Kentucky-Tennessee border for probably an hour. And thank goodness there was an Eagles channel on satellite radio at that point. We listened to a whole concert.
Because I've looked for it numerous times.
Yes.
They could be on there all the time as far as I'm concerned. It's
Amen,
on my
brother.
Pandora. I've got an Eagles station on my Pandora on my phone, so I don't know what's wrong with Sirius.
Let's talk about Carl and Jamal. Let's talk a little bit. I thought Kevin Knox was another good example of this as he made his declaration to go into the draft.
you know, the knock that Cal sometimes gets for, you know, it's guys just come there for 1 year and you know, they're already pros when they get there. They're not really developed. They don't develop in 1 year. Knox is a good example. Here was a guy that, you know, the guy we saw at the end of the year running off all those screens, doing such a great job of setting up shots. That's not who he was at the beginning of the year. Karl Anthony Towns, young man we were talking about, tremendous transformation in his game from the beginning of the year to the end of the year when, you know, he was not a back-to-the-basket scorer in the first half of the season and became lethal in the stretch run of that 2015 season.
He did, and it's so hard to develop guys in 1 year to where you think they'll be in the NBA because they're just 19 or 18, whatever it may be, even after a couple years. And the game changes. The pro game is totally different than the college game. The college game is trying to move forward to that. I think you saw a glimpse of that with Villanova and other teams, you know, the four out, one under combination, interchangeable parts it used to be called. I think it's called now positionless basketball, but same thing. It's all going that way. So, and then guys get bigger, stronger. They zero in on basketball when they get to the NBA. So there's an opportunity, huge opportunity, to change your game as you develop in the pros, whether it be in the G League. Look at Scout. He goes to the G League, spends a lot of time, and now he's up with Sacramento. Of course, that's their last place. I mean, you wonder sometimes, and people have to remember this, that, you know, how many of these teams that get in the lottery really make a pick to improve themselves? It took Philly, what, three picks? It took Embiid, Nerlens, Embiid, Simmons, and now Fultz, and Fultz really hasn't even scratched the surface in his development because of injuries. You know, so it was a process, they called it, in Philly. But it takes a while. It takes a while for even those top three or four guys. Tatum moved in at Boston, but he was physically set up to start with, and Boston had an awful good team. But, you know, Tom, I wasn't a big Simmons fan. I was wrong there. I thought the NBA game was not going to be kind to him. Boy, he is I'm not so crazy about his toot necessarily, but, boy, does he pass that ball, and he's become a rebounder. But with Embiid back there to be the goalkeeper, you know, to be a rim protector, he doesn't have to guard anybody. So it was a great fit. And, you know, Philly was spot on with taking the kid. I have to admit, I missed on that one.
I thought Kevin really developed, you know, and you could make the case of the way he could have grown his game, but he really did develop. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander grew his game tremendously over the course of 1 year.
Yeah, they both did, and you cannot fault these guys if they're going to come in at the end of the lottery, right outside the lottery, somewhere in there, 13 to 16 or whatever it may be. They're going to come in there someplace. You know, that's a lot of guaranteed money. I was just looking at some guys watching the games. You can go to a website and you can see what everybody's making, and you go, holy moly, this guy's making what? And where did he play? And, hey, you can't blame those guys. It's life setup money for these guys if they're drafted in that range where they're pretty well predicted to go. So now it's up to them. I think Shea's going to have with his work habits and work ethic, they're going to like him, like Miami thinks so much of Bam because of his work ethic and how hard that he tries to get better and want to be better. I think Shea will be along those lines. And, you get in that, you become a rotation player in the NBA, and you got a long career. You stay healthy and save your money, and you're unlike the rest of us in the world, right?
Absolutely. Talking with Mike Pratt. He's weekly visits here to the show brought to you by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bardstown. I saw a story in the Ringer recently. They caught up to several of the Kentucky guys, Aaron Harris and Daniel Orton, Derek Willis, forget the others. But to talk about leaving Kentucky, going to the NBA early and guys that are spending their careers at the moment. Marcus Teague was another one they talked to in the G League and what that's like. And Derek Willis referenced, you know, at Kentucky you take a charter flight for a game to Tennessee, and now he's riding a bus on any trip under 600 miles. And they were all talking about even Orton, who was a guy who didn't leave maybe under the best of circumstances, all talked about how great it was and how much they miss the time here at Kentucky. And it made me think about a guy like, and you can speak to this, like Hamidou Diallo right now is going through this decision-making process. And I think the feeling is most people around the program probably feel he'll end up making the decision to go to the draft, but it's not a cinch. But yeah, if he elects to come back, he may face dramatic decrease in minutes, and you know that shots, all those things. But the thing is, a guy like him, to me, the most prudent way to look at it would be to say, I'm going to stay here until I get my game ready to have a chance to last at the next level. And I always think with him about a guy like DeAndre Liggins, who made in 3 years here transformed himself into an outstanding defender and just a great team guy and a glue guy. And I could see Hamidou being that kind of player, but it might not happen in 1 year, may not happen in two, and it might not happen in, you know, it might take 3 or 4 years to make it happen, but it could happen. What's your take on him?
Yeah, you and I have talked about this many times off air, on traveling, that young fellow, Hami, could be a DeAndre Liggins if he would take the approach DeAndre has taken. That, yeah. Look, I'm not an offensive player. I'm a defender. I'm a passer. I'm an energy guy. And that's where I'm going to make my living. And by the way, once you make your first year's minimum, which is $8.25 million, then they pay you second year money, which is higher than that. So all I got to do I got to defend, rebound, be good in the locker room, and man, I'm making more money than 99.9% of the people in this country. You got to take that approach. I think one of the problems young fellas have, and I think we all experience this no matter when, as athletes, you go from high school to where you're just a high school basketball player, and now it's AAU, and then you go to college, and man, you go to a school like Kentucky, and it's fast lane, man. It's nice stuff, you know, as far as travel, food. You know, you have study hall, you have tutors, all that stuff. Then all of a sudden you're on your own, man. And if you don't stick in the NBA, of course they all think they will, but reality says they won't. You spend time in the G League or over in Europe where it's not, you take a step backwards instead of going forward like you have been. And it creates a whiplash mentally, I think, for some of these guys to where they go, wow, what's this? You know, I mean, hey, and it stunts their growth for a while. Unless they accept that as.
Oh, it was like we lost Mike, lost connection to Mike. But we'll get back with him next week for our regular Thursday sessions and pick up more on that. But appreciate Mike Pratt joining us here on the Leach Report. We're halfway home. Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. When we come right back.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I've got 7 women on.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can follow Tom on Twitter. It's at Tom Leach, KY.
We're 6 away from the top of the hour, Thursday edition of the Leach Report. Looks like going to be ideal conditions for the blue-white game tomorrow at Kroger Field. Temperature during the day tomorrow in the upper 70s, so that'll carry over into the 6:30 start. Should just be a pleasant evening for football, and it looks like there's going to be a great turnout at the game for Kentucky tomorrow that will wrap up spring practice. We'll have the call on the UK network. 6 o'clock is when our pregame starts, and we will get the game rolling about 6:30. Justin Rowland joins us from CatsIllustrated.com. We'll start talking about that particular sport and the storylines that you'll be most interested to follow, Justin, in this game tomorrow, starting, I guess, with the quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, at quarterback, I'm probably more interested in seeing Terry Wilson and Gunnar Hoke. We've seen Gunnar Hoke for 2 straight spring games look good, so I'm sure he'll probably do some good things. And with Terry Wilson, not as much, you know, how much he's grasped the playbook and the timing and things that are going to improve, but just how good of an athlete is he? What kind of throws can he make? Can he hit all parts of the field? And that's what I'm looking at quarterback. And then receiver and the defensive line are interesting as well.
I was saying earlier in the week, cautioning people to make any definitive decisions on a guy like Terry, because I remember watching Steven Johnson play in his first spring game, and I was thoroughly unimpressed. But when I saw him about midway through the August practices in the second scrimmage is when it really kind of was the day the light bulb came on for him, at least in what I had seen. And so the point being is guys that are new can, you know, make a significant transformation from a spring to a fall.
Exactly. Very new. And that's why I'm more interested in just kind of measuring his physical traits. You know, what kind of arm strength does he have? What is his kind of natural, you know, his true talent accuracy look like? How does the ball look coming out of his hand? Just how good could he be in a best-case scenario as he picks up more of the offense?
So an interesting read, I thought, at the Saturday Down South site. They talked about the quarterback battle at Kentucky and said it could provide insight into the philosophy Kentucky wants to pursue this fall, making the point that Wilson might be a little bit of a higher risk, higher reward way to go. Hoke might be the safer choice, but the question for him is, can he make the big plays? Eddie Grant talked earlier this week that they need to get the big play, the home run ball, back into their offense that was missing last season. And I thought it was probably a pretty good way to frame up the choice between the two of those guys, right?
Yeah. You would imagine that Hoke's floor, you know, the worst-case scenario, you hate to even think in those terms, is higher because he's been in the program longer, more comfortable with the offense, the personnel, what the coaches are expecting. But, you know, Wilson's athleticism and his explosiveness that we've heard about would seem to give him the ceiling edge. And the other thing that I've always felt like kind of favors Wilson a little bit, not conclusive necessarily, but Kentucky's blocked better for the run than the pass. You know, over the past few seasons, even as the line's improved, and his mobility could really come in handy because of that.
I think the sacks column could be noteworthy on both sides of the ball for Kentucky. If they are going to be a better throwing team, they'll face more pressure. They'll need to protect the quarterback. And then on the other side, Mark Stoops' defenses that were so good at Florida State were perennially at the top of the ACC, top two or three in sacks and tackles for loss, and we haven't seen that yet at Kentucky, and it's all about personnel, but they're moving closer to the direction defensively, and I think especially, you know, up front where it looks to be some significant upgrades that they can move up in those particular rankings in the SEC, and if they do, that's when the defense starts to get better, I think.
Yeah, it's only reasonable to assume that the sacks and the pressures and the havoc stats are going to improve this year. You know, that's the reasonable assumption because of how experienced and deep the defense is. They're going to have Pascal and Josh Allen and Denzel Ware on the field very frequently now defensively. And you want to see the defensive line make strides in the spring game, but I also want to see Landon Young start to turn into that elite left tackle because that would take the offense to another level as well.
Yeah, and the buzz has been good about him this spring in that regard, right?
Yeah, it sounds like the coaches, when they've talked to reporters, have been high on him, talking about how he's becoming more and more of a technician. He's always had great leadership qualities, and you can just see, like, in pictures of him, I'm sure people standing there next to him see it even more, but he just looks a lot bigger and sturdier than he did even last year, so that's been impressive to see.
DeAndre Square's a guy, a newcomer, that's generated quite a bit of buzz. I know you follow these guys closely through the recruiting process. Are you surprised that he's made the splash that he has to this point?
Yeah, on one level I am. Like, I kind of filed him away in the same category as Eli Brown when he got to Kentucky. He didn't have the injury that Eli Brown was coming in with, but an explosive, athletic, undersized guy who would have benefited from a red shirt. But, you know, I'm not surprised because the depth is so severely tested at those linebacker positions right now. I still think if he plays, it'll have more to do with depth than his being ready, but certainly a positive that the coaches seem to think he's been one of the surprises.
And a guy's name who pops up a lot, it seems, is Lynn Bowden, which is, I think, a really encouraging development because you just saw, you know, the occasional flash from him last season, especially within the offense more so than special teams, of, you know, what he could do. But as he becomes a more polished receiver, and then they can learn to trust him more in routes and in plays where they just get the ball in his hands more frequently. It sounds like they're moving in that direction with him.
Yeah, and the great thing about a guy like Bowden is, if he is coming into his own, he's the kind of guy you're not going to struggle to get the ball to. You're not going to be throwing a ton of downfield long timing routes to him. You're going to be, getting the ball to him near the line of scrimmage. So the more he masters that underneath slot craft, that's going to have a big impact on the team. I'm also really fascinated to see Isaiah Epps, because that's another guy they've talked up a lot too.
Yeah, and he looked early last year, really through training camp, as a guy that might be an impact player, and they tried to go deep to him a couple times. He made one big catch late in the year, but really never made the splash that you thought that he might from what you had seen early. But he's a guy that, like Wilson, is from Oklahoma. Supposedly they've developed a little bit of the chemistry, and Kentucky's got to find a way to get that home run threat back into its offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't have a ton of options just because of the depth, but Taven Richardson has proven to be more of a deep threat than I thought he was going to be. Kind of saw him as a possession guy coming in, and he makes plays downfield. Isaiah Epps needs to get stronger in the upper body, and that's something that'll happen with time. He's a promising player for sure.
Let's shift gears to a little basketball. Your new one of your new recruiting writers, David Sisk, had an interview with Matthew Hurt's family, a player that Kentucky is looking at. And one of the more interesting things that came out of the story was something John Calipari told the family about a tweak to his recruiting.
Yeah, he said a few things, but the one thing that I think a lot of people are talking about is he told the family he's not going to recruit guys that can't shoot. And, he's talking to a guy and his family, Hurt, who's obviously a good shooter as a big man, so that would obviously appeal to him, but it sounds like maybe a little bit of a reaction following, a really extreme case of a team not shooting well this season. And they succeeded in some respects in spite of that, but it sounds like he's trying to make it clear, look, this isn't going to be the new normal. I'm going to adjust because of what happened.
Yeah, I think two things that come out of this season for Cal. If he can help it, and you can't always in this day and time, but if he can help it, he doesn't want to have to start five freshmen frequently, and not to, I guess you could start five, but to not have any veteran experience to really rely on. And then the second thing would be not to have to go into every game knowing you're going to get outscored on threes.
Yeah, and especially on the first point, he sounded like whenever he was asked about being this young, he's like, yeah, I don't like this. This is frustrating. It's difficult. So no doubt he wants the experience. I'm still inclined to think there's a part of me that thinks that at the end of the day, we can talk about shooting, but Calipari still wants just as many top 5 to 10 players as he can get. He wants probably at least one or two dead-eye shooters, but I don't think you can get the elite player out of his mind. That's just kind of in his makeup. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, probably a good point. Justin, thank you much.
Thanks a lot.
Justin Rowland joins us on Thursdays from CatsIllustrated.com at Roland Rivals on Twitter. At 16 away from the top of the hour, it is the Leach Report Radio Network. Our guest lineup each day is presented by Sleep Outfitters here on the show. They have an exclusive Sealy cushion fur mattresses for $299 right now for the Queen set. You can save $100. The Sealy memory foam mattress in a box is just $169 for the twins. Some great deals right now. Free delivery options on qualifying purchases. And Sleep Outfitters is the number one Tempur-Pedic retailer. And for a limited time, you can save up to 50% on Tempur-Pedic floor models. We have a Tempur-Pedic UK mattress in our house and absolutely love it. Check them out at Sleep Outfitters. We'll be right back.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Each year, Maker's Mark does its commemorative bottle program with the University of Kentucky. And this year, the bottles are honoring the 1998 National Championship team on the occasion of the 20th anniversary season. And hopefully you have your bottles now. They went on sale last Friday. They're always extremely popular. And you will head out to the Keene Barn tomorrow morning to get them signed by the gentleman who is with us and all the rest of the gang, Cameron Mills from the 98 championship team.
Hey, Tom.
So Tubby's coming back, which
Tubby,
is great.
I pick Coach up at the airport this afternoon and take him directly to Keene Barn, because this afternoon we're doing a private signing for the Keeneland and Maker's Mark employees, which is funny because aren't they racing today at Keeneland?
They are.
Yeah, so I'm not. I guess the employees won't be there. We'll be signing their bottles for them while they're hard at work. But then tonight we have dinner, just the nine of us with Coach. Five of our managers are coming in. Brooks Downing will be there. So we're gonna. And it's actually just it's odd. This is our 20th anniversary, and it's our year for the bottle. I mean, that's really by chance. Yeah. I don't think they planned it that way, because this thing, as you said, started 4 years ago. So we've got the big signing tomorrow morning.
Starts at 7 a.m.
Starts at 7, yeah. But see, no, it doesn't. We have to be there at 6:30. So for us, it starts at 6:30, Tom. But Tubby will be there signing. Nine of us will be there. Eight, counting me. So not eight of my teammates will be there. I've been giddy for weeks.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, just nine guys coming in, and we're going to make it a weekend reunion, so we can't wait.
You guys are doing some other events, too, beyond the one tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow morning, the tickets are gone. They only give out 1,000 tickets, and you can bring up to two bottles. So we're going to be signing approximately 2,000 bottles in the morning, which they sell like 14,000 of these things, I think, maybe more. And so if you didn't get your bottle signed to Keeneland, or you weren't lucky enough to get a ticket to go to the Keeneland signing in the morning, we're having a public signing tomorrow night at 4:30 at All Sports in Fayette Mall here in Lexington, where it's you can get every signature costs $10, and then you can get all nine signatures. Now, Tubby won't be there tomorrow night, but you can get all nine of the players' signatures for $75. So bring your bottles, and we'll sign your bottles, and you can have – you can be one of the few probably still that has a signed bottle, but still get your bottle signed.
You guys, I don't know, was there a 10-year reunion? I mean, how often do you guys get together?
This is the first time these nine guys will be in the same room since April, whatever, 1998.
Since you were in a locker room.
Yeah.
Since you were in a locker room.
We were in the locker room.
Celebrated.
That's right. Well, right. So Rupp Arena would be, because the moment we were home from that celebration at Rupp Arena, we all kind of, the seniors, Alan Edwards, Jeff Shepard and I, we started doing our own autograph sessions and Barnstorm tours, and we were never back with the guys and who stayed. And so this will be the first time. It's just like last year when the 96 team had their basically 21-year, 20-and-a-half-year reunion, I guess it would be. That was literally the first time those 14 guys have been in the same room since 1996. So that's what I'm so excited about. It's just, this never happens.
We've talked before about the loss on Valentine's Day that led to the early practices and the team meeting and that transformation. How quickly did that happen? I mean, we see teams make turnarounds. Was there something instantly that you guys, in a snap of a finger, thought, okay, this is different, or was it gradual?
I think it was gradual. What I remember is the SEC tournament that year is when I literally, we're in the second game of that tournament. We're up, I want to say 30 on, I think Arkansas was the second round game, the semifinal game. We're up 30 on a good Arkansas team. And I'm just killing him. And it's like every ball is bouncing our way. Coach Pitino used to say, to win a national championship, you have to have skill, you have to work hard, and you have to have a little bit of luck. Now, I'm a person that doesn't believe in luck, but I believe you have to have a little bit of luck to win a national championship. It's just not easy to do. And I remember being out on the court during a play, and the ball just kicked weird right into Wayne Turner's hands, who went full court for a layup, and we were up 32. And I just remember thinking, what has happened? Well, why? Everything just seems to be going our way, and fortunately it did for seven more games.
The game against Duke in the regional final, down 17, come back to win, is one of the fondest memories Kentucky fans have. I'm just curious. I mean, you guys were a two seed, so it's not like it was a massive upset.
Right.
But I remember at the time feeling like, you know, nobody was giving you guys a chance, even though you were only one seed line below.
And not only that, but if you remember, that was the first game of the tournament we actually were even challenged. We had blown everyone else in that tournament. It kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. We were blowing
UCLA in Sweet 16 by about 30.
That game got so silly. In the first half, Jeff Shepard's doing finger rolls, and we used to have this running joke about when you did a finger roll, you had to say, one thing I could do is finger roll. And so he literally does a finger roll, makes it, runs down the bench kind of in his follow-through, and says it to us. In the second half, if you're up 30, in the first half of the NCAA tournament game against UCLA, that's how crazy it got. So, but it was also an upset because we were down 17. And I've told you this before, maybe off the air, but I remember sitting on the bench down 17 thinking, well, I can't complain about my career. I mean, literally thinking it was over, and thankfully, Shimu Evans and Wayne Turner and Jeff Shepard and Scott Padgett weren't thinking along those lines of their career that season being over. They were out there fighting for the lead and got it back for us.
At what point did Wayne know he owned Wojciechowski?
Well, if you watch, not to do a plug, but you know I was going to anyway. If you watch the documentary we did this year, Out of the Blue, which you can go to outofthebluemovie.com and buy the DVD, Wayne says, and I never heard Wayne say this, but when we interviewed Wayne, he said he came out in the second half, and basically when Wojo was still on him, and basically he said, I don't know if the guys will remember this. That's what he said in the interview. I don't know if everyone remembers, but I pulled the guys together on the court. So four of his teammates, whoever that was on the court, and said, hey, I'm trying to take my man every time. So basically our play set in the second half was give it to Wayne and let him break Wojo down and either take it until he stopped and dish or take it until he's not stopped and make the basket. And that's exactly what happened. Every play involved Wayne Turner in that second half.
Just there was just an advantage it was there, just, and
yeah, I mean, Wojo could not stop Wayne. I mean, not many of us could in practice. I mean, Wayne just had the ability to not only get to the basket, but to make shots. I mean, he was a scorer. He wasn't a shooter. He had a terrible looking shot, but he was a scorer, and he had the ability to get there and make shots. And so now you've got to respect him. And when he went six in a row or made 6 points in a row, I think at one point, all of a sudden Duke's defense changes, collapses on him, and Hashimu gets two threes on the wing. You know, Scott hits his big three. Shep's getting easy runner buckets, all because Wayne could not be stopped.
Yeah, and that was the thing about that comeback that if you go back and watch it, you can see it in the DVD. Well, no, you don't get to use the game highlights.
Yeah,
you hear about it.
You can actually go to YouTube and watch the whole game. NCAA's put it there.
That with the what they were kicking out for those threes, I mean, that 17-point deficit was about three-fourths gone in four shots.
Yes. No, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I didn't notice that until a few weeks ago when I sat down on YouTube and rewatched the game for the first time in a few years. That 17-point lead was down to, like, eight in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, because it just changed. And when that changed, all of a sudden we've got the momentum, and it just carries on from there.
Enjoy it. Well, and I know you'll have great fun. Enjoy this weekend. And I look forward to seeing Coach Smith and all the guys this weekend.
Thank you, man.
Cameron Mills joining us here on the Leach Report. We're going to take a quick break, come back to wrap it up after this timeout. Now a slice of Wildcat history, a couple of birthdays. Former Wildcat player and coach Joker Phillips celebrating a birthday today. And longtime friend of the show, the legendary Transylvania University basketball coach Don Lane. Happy birthday to both of those guys today. Going to be fun to see those guys for the 98 team in town this weekend. So hopefully you guys, if you are fortunate enough to have one of the tickets for the event at Keeneland tomorrow morning, see you out there. Going to be doing the show from out at the Keene Barn tomorrow morning. Talk to Coach Mingione about a big series down at Georgia. Jen Smith will join us to preview the Blue-White game. And we'll see if we can round up maybe another one of those guys from the 98 team as well. Got a note here from a listener, Todd, who wrote in, and I've been meaning to get to this. He was lamenting the players having to learn a new roster every year. He says it's getting old. Thing is, it's the way the game is structured now, so the only thing I can tell you is you're just going to have to make peace with it. I think you're going to see a few more guys back next season than certainly were for this past season, so that will help a little bit. He said he talks about the shooters and the Villanova hitting 18 threes in one of the Final Four games, and I think Cal certainly looks like he is moving more toward having a little more of a presence of perimeter shooting. We'll pick up more on this at another time, but Todd, I just wanted to get to your note and let you know we did get it. We are
Thanks
done. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here.